Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to the other side of paradise. We will resume here, where we left off. Our couple was showing cracks just 2 episodes ago. Before we begin, let me issue a trigger warning, though. This episode will, unfortunately, discuss self-harm and suicide. Thus is the dangers in reviewing history. If any of these are sensitive topics for you, I encourage you to skip this episode. But before any of that occurs, we're going to go to the beach. Close your eyes and join me at the French Riviera. The Fitzgeralds made the move in 1924 with their toddler and heavy expectations that France would give them a place to start over. And it did in the beginning. The Fitzgeralds were quickly introduced to Sarah and Gerald Murphy, who let them into their social circle. The Murphys were American expats who left New York for France and crafted a vibrant social circle of the creatives of the day. The regulars in that group include Ernest Hemingway, Don Dos Passos, Fernand Léger, Jean Cocteau, Pablo Picasso, Archibald MacLeish, John O'Hara, Cole Porter, Dorothy Parker, and Robert Benchley. Forgive my pronunciations of French names, I sadly am not French. This is also the time in which Scott began his work on The Great Gatsby. Scott's other novels, as my last episode notes, were intensely autobiographical. Gatsby is not. Scott was not unaware of this distinction, as he told his editor before leaving America that he planned to write something new, something extraordinary and beautiful and simple, and intricately patterned. In my opinion, he did. The original concept for Jay Gatsby would be that of a freedman, or, in modern terms, an emancipated slave. This version of Gatsby not only faced the barriers of class, but also race. But, in the end, Jay Gatsby morphed into a more Scott-like figure. Upon The Great Gatsby's publication, Scott's peers, writers Willa Cather, T.S. Eliot, and Edith Wharton, praised his work. Well, critics and audiences eviscerated it. In the end, Scott's royalties check was $13.13, as he had absorbed the cost of all of his unsold copies. While Scott had been writing, Zelda had been busy as well. She had begun an affair. Now, this is likely neither the first affair between Zelda and Scott, but it was the first sustained affair. The man in question is Edouard S. Josanne, a French aviator. This affair was no secret. Zelda and her man publicly frolicked on beaches and danced close together in casinos. Only 6 weeks into the infatuation, Zelda asked Scott for a divorce. He responded the way Myrtle's husband does to the affair in The Great Gatsby. He locked her in their house. She eventually gave up on the divorce, and Edouard led Rivera shortly after. Years later, a biographer of Zelda sought him out to get this quote. He said, "They both had a need of drama. They made it up, or perhaps they were victims of their own unsettled and a little unhealthy imaginations." The Fitzgeralds reemerged and dived into their creative society again. This is when Ernest Hemingway developed a deeper relationship with Scott. Zelda had thrown herself into late hopes of beginning a ballet career, and Scott took up companionship with Ernest. The two had many differences, but did seem to have a genuine friendship that was deepened by their creative geniuses. Ernest, however, did not like Zelda. He reported that she degraded Scott, encouraged his alcoholism, and led him away from novel writing and into short stories. Now, in Zelda's defense, Scott's last novel rendered them $13.13, while writing short stories supported them and their child. It is unclear if there is an underlying animosity between Zelda and Hemingway. Too little is known about the circumstances. After all, Hemingway had just abandoned his wife for a ballerina. It is possible he resented their marriage, and it is very likely he resented Zelda for accusing the two of them of having a homosexual affair. But also, in Hemingway's defense, Zelda was deteriorating. Her ballet career went nowhere, and her marriage was dissolving on many fronts. Beyond the tension, the dislike, and the drama. It was showing that something was deeply wrong with Zelda. One night, at a party, as Scott ignored her to converse with the famous dancer Isadora Duncan, Zelda flung herself down a flight of marble stairs. This is unmistakably beyond the realm of the dramatic debutante, and into the universe of mental illness. It's September 1924. Zelda overdosed on sleeping pills. Suddenly, this couple was tight-lipped. Though affairs, fights, and disapproving best friends had all been wholly public, this was never mentioned. The couple never discussed the overdose, and never commented on whether or not it was a suicide attempt. Scott wrote at the time, "That September 1924, I knew something had happened that could never be repaired." Scott then embraced his unhealthy relationship with alcohol, open-armed. In what was becoming a pattern of relocation in the hopes of a fresh start, the Fitzgeralds moved to Hollywood, where Scott worked on scripts as well as his novel, Tender as the Night. During this time on set, Scott met Lois Moran, an 18-year-old actress. They began a hotly passionate affair. Zelda chose a different kind of heat and burned all of her clothing as a response. The Fitzgeralds fled to Delaware. At this point, Zelda's behavior had devolved even further, and it became clear, in an age still fairly blind to psychology, that Zelda had a mental illness. She was diagnosed with schizophrenia in 1930. They relocated to Switzerland for her to receive treatment. After some improvement, the Fitzgeralds returned to America in 1931, only for Zelda to be rehospitalized in 1932. This time residing at Johns Hopkins University. Scott began writing Tender as the Night then, capitalizing on his current life events. In Zelda's time in the hospital, she was encouraged to journal as an outlet. Instead, she wrote a novel, Save Me the Waltz. This led to Scott accusing her of plagiarism and later convincing the doctors to prevent her from writing about their lives. Scott published his account of the time, Tender as the Night, in 1934. It did poorly. Once again, Scott was faced with serious financial troubles. He was in debt, his wife was hospitalized, and his daughter was attending a private school, and he was regularly attending the hospital as years of heavy drinking began to take its toll. At 40, he was not the man he had once been. This was noted by many others, including the press, who reported this for the world to see. After a particularly pointed article, Scott attempted to take his own life. Unfortunately, Zelda was in no better shape. Her behavior had gone from erratic to violent. What was left of their marriage crumbled. The last time they saw each other was on a trip to Cuba, where Scott drunkenly attempted to end a cockfight and ended up beaten and intoxicated. He was sent back to the United States to receive medical treatment. At this point, the Fitzgeralds effectively separated. Zelda revolved between hospitals and Montgomery, while Scott moved to Hollywood, beginning a lucrative deal with a production studio. He dated a gossip columnist there. But the two never stopped writing letters, perhaps living a fantasy through the missives, or maybe they are proof that the love never really died. Paul Alexander for the Washington Post explores this period of their lives, saying, "When his fourth novel, Tender as the Night, failed, Fitzgerald found solace in their relationship." He quotes their letters, saying, "We haven't been happy just once," Scott wrote. "We've been happy 1,000 times. Forget the past and turn about and swim back home to me." The fact that Zelda could not swim back to him was heartbreaking to them both. She writes, "Since we first met, I have loved you with whatever I had to love with you with. Sadly, other uncontrollable forces intervened." At 44, Scott died of a heart attack. His life mirrored that of the men he wrote, even in death. Like Jay Gatsby or James Gatz, his funeral was sparse, with only 30 people in attendance. 8 years later, in perhaps the most tragic note in this story, Zelda died, trapped in the burning women's wing of the hospital she was in residency at. Scott and Zelda were buried together.